Happy New Year and welcome to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. Today we'll hear Mitch Albom's December 10, 2011 MSU commencement address.
Taking only makes me feel more like I'm dying. Giving makes me feel like I'm living. Giving makes me feel like I'm living. It is a profound sentence.
Joe Wald will tell us all about the Greater Lansing Food Bank, and MSU Alumni Association Executive Director Scott Westerman will introduce you to inspiring MSU alumna Brittany Fox and her Thai song Fair Trade. MSU Today on WKAR in a moment.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Here's award-winning journalist, best-selling author, and popular radio host Mitch Albom's December 10, 2011 MSU commencement address.
Dr. Ian Gray, Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies, will present the candidate for honorary degree.
Mr. Albom, will you please come forward? President Simon, I have the honor to present Mr. Mitchell David Albom for the awarding of the honorary degree, Doctor of Humanities.
I am pleased to award you the honorary degree, Doctor of Humanities, from Michigan State University.
Distinguished guests, faculty, relatives, graduating class, and last but not least, the bill payers, mom and dads. Good morning to all of you. I have 12 minutes. That's what they told me. 12 minutes to get you ready for the big wide world out there. 12 minutes to impart the wisdom of the ages. I mentioned this to my wife last night, and she said, "That's easy. Just don't do what Snooki did." And that may be the smartest advice I can give you in life. And now I have 11 and a half minutes. That's okay. It's plenty of time. Plenty of time to warn you about something strange that will happen to each and every one of you later today. When you break from this ceremony, you will hug loved ones. You'll shake hands with well-wishers. You'll feel as if you're meeting and greeting the entire world. But if you look very carefully out of the crowd, you'll spot one more person coming towards you. This person will look vaguely like you, only the hair will be thinner, the face will be more wrinkled, the midsection a little thicker, the clothes a few sizes larger. This person will walk straight towards you, ignoring others, because this person cannot be seen by anyone else. This person will grab your hand, look you in the eye, then whisper something into your ear. And it will be the most important words you will ever hear. This person is you, 30 or 40 or 50 years from now. Come back to tell you how you turned out. I know, I have revisited myself on my own graduation day 35 years ago. I carried in my arms the precious lessons learned from my mistakes, from experience, and from teachers. One of those teachers was a college professor, like some of you in the audience. His name was Maury Schwartz. We were very close back in our university days. We even walked around campus, ate meals together. He tried to teach me all the time, even when we were eating, Follow your heart, he'd say. Follow your dreams. Give to your community. Be part of the human family. He got so excited, had always had these huge ideas, but sometimes he forgot to chew. And he used to eat these egg salad sandwiches. And these little yellow projectiles would come flying out of his mouth. I should have paid more attention to the words, not the spittle. Instead, after graduation, I lost touch with him for 16 years. 16 years without even a phone call, while I chased my ambition and my accomplishments. Then one day in my late 30s, in my very comfortable home, in my very comfortable suburb, I saw him walking, I saw him on television, talking about what it was like to die from ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. He only had a few months left on this planet. I flew to see him. He was in a wheelchair, already unable to move most of his body. I must have looked like I felt sorry for him because he smiled at me and he said, "Mitch, dying is only one thing to feel sad about. Living unhappily is another." I wish I had known that lesson when I wore a younger man's robe on a day like you're having today. Maury also taught me about giving. I watched visitor after visitor come by to try to cheer him up. They'd walk in with a strategy, jokes, photos, funny stories. The door would close. An hour later, they'd emerge in tears. But they'd be crying about their divorce, their love life, their job. And I saw this happen so often that I finally went into Maury and I said, "I don't get it. They come in to cheer you up. You start talking to them. And eventually you're cheering them up." "If anyone," I said, "had finally earned the right to say, 'Let's not talk about your problems, let's talk about my problems,' it would be you. If anyone has earned the right to say, 'You think you got it bad, look at me, I'm dying, I can't move.' You hit the mother lode of sympathy," I said, "why don't you use it?" And he looked at me sadly and he said, "Mitch, why would I take from people like that? Taking only makes me feel more like I'm dying. Giving makes me feel like I'm living. Giving makes me feel like I'm living." It is a profound sentence. It also rhymes, so it's easy to remember. Giving is living. And it's true because the opposite is false. Taking does not make you feel alive. I have seen how empty it feels when you just take a new car, a new piece of furniture, a bigger TV set. Sure, it's fun, but it's over quickly. But when you give, when you hand a homeless man a plate of food, when you hug an orphan who hasn't felt the mother's or father's arms in years, when you simply give a boost to someone who's low and they say thank you, and you get that little tingle in your stomach, that's being alive. And Maury was right. Only giving gives you that feeling. Giving is living. And I had to come back and tell my younger self that when I was wearing the robes that you wear today. Maury used to share this other little story over and over because it made him smile even as he was dying. It was a story of two waves splashing around, doing what waves do. And all of a sudden, one of the waves sees the shore coming, and it starts to panic. "What's the matter?" the other wave says. "Why are you so upset?" "This is terrible," the first wave says. "You don't understand. We're waves. We'll hit the shore, and a few more flips, and we're finished." "No, you don't understand," the other wave said. "You're not a wave. You're part of the ocean." And then Maury would say, "You get it? Part of the ocean?" And I'd say, "Yeah, Maury, I got it. I got it the first 100 times you told me this story." But it is a beautiful story because we all splash around. We all flip to our own tunes. But while we may feel like the most important wave in the world, the fact is we are, you are, part of something bigger, part of the human ocean. We are connected. And because we are connected, we owe each other something. So many people today will tell you, you're special. Well, you are special, but so is the next person. You're not special at his or her expense. You are not special because you pound your chest after an achievement. You are special because you're part of a team that helped you do it. You're not special because you start a company that rakes in money. You're special to be part of a country that allows you the freedom to do that. You're not special because you graduated, but you are part of something special at this university, a great university. And you are part of something special in this state, Michigan, a great state, one that has every right to be proud, no matter what East or West Coast cynics may say. And while we're on that subject, please remember this. Cynicism is not wisdom. It's just cynicism. Snarky does not make you smart. It just makes you snarky. Somewhere along the way, I think between Simon Cowell and TMZ, meanness became a celebrated trait in this country. Don't celebrate it, because it's not. When you get older, you see meanness for what it is. Meanness. And you'll feel silly for thinking you were so unique, you earned the right to behave like a jerk to someone else. I have told my young self that when I revisited me on the day you celebrate today. Quick last lessons in the 3 minutes I have left. One, Woody Allen once said, I don't believe in the afterlife, but I'm taking a change of underwear just in case. Good lesson, be prepared for anything. Two, graffiti on a wall once read, God is dead, and underneath it said, Nietzsche. Next to it was written, Nietzsche is dead, and underneath it said, God. Good lesson, remember who's in charge. Three, the finest philosopher I ever knew, my mother, once said, if you have two true friends in your life, you'll be lucky. This was obviously before Facebook. But friending is not friendship, and texting is not conversation. Be human with people. Look them in the eye. Speak to them face to face. Make a few good friends, real ones, three-dimensional ones, and do everything it takes to keep them, including occasionally leaving the house. Finally, one last lesson from an old dying clergyman who became the subject of the story, Have a Little Faith. We were talking about happiness, the secret of happiness, one time when he was in the hospital after suffering a stroke. He was close to 90 years old. He heard a baby crying out in the hallway, and he said, ah, do you hear that infant? And I said, yes. And he said, did you ever notice how when babies come into the world, their little fists are clenched like that? Yeah, I said. That's because babies don't know any better. And they come into the world thinking they're going to take everything. But look at me. I'm an old man, and I'm going to die soon. And how am I going to die? And he opened his palms like that. That's because, he said, when we reach the end, we finally realize we can't take anything with us. We sat quietly for a minute, and then to break the silence, I said, so, have we solved the secret of happiness? Yes, we have, he said. Are you going to tell me? Yes, I will, he said. Are you ready? Ready, I said. For the secret of happiness? Definitely, I am ready. Go ahead. Be satisfied. That's it, I said. Be grateful. That's it. For all the love you receive and for all God has given you. That's it, I said. That's it, he said. I have whispered that in my young ear many times when my future self comes back to my graduation day when I wore the younger man's robes. You may notice this speech, now down to its final minute, contain no reference to the challenge of society or how our generation is counting on your generation to make the nation strong and great and powerful. That's because you can't have a great nation full of less than good people. Be human, be good to each other, and the nation will be great as a result. What will your future self tell you today when it comes back through those doors and over the hill, looking only for you? My guess is it may whisper these instructions. Don't lose sight of who you are. Don't stop dreaming big. Don't let people tell you to get real, if getting real is a code word for getting cynical, getting insensitive, or getting too busy for people who truly matter in your life. Your children, your spouse, your friends, your old professors. When later today that future you comes walking towards you and he or she whispers in your ear, this is what you wanted to say. Hey kid, you turned out all right. You've helped others. You've stayed true to your ideals. You lived with a whole heart. You've touched the world. You've made Michigan proud. You've made Michigan State proud. And most importantly, you didn't do what Snooki did. I hope and pray your visitor from the future is smiling when he or she comes. You have the chance to ensure that with every decision you make from now on. Seize life with vigor, young Spartan friends. Seize it with compassion, and always seize it with love. Good luck, and God bless you all.
Thank you, Dr. Album. Let's also give him another round of applause. He's on his way to Haiti this afternoon.
That was Mitch Album's December 10, 2011 MSU commencement address here on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear it again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Joe Wald fills us in on everything we need to know about the Greater Lansing Food Bank.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at msutoday.com.
MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Joe Wald is the interim executive director of the Greater Lansing Food Bank.
Well, I think what people really need to know is that some really exciting things are beginning to happen. For many, many years, there have been two food banks in Lansing. Most people don't know that. We work together, but it's those that have found out, understand it, it's a little bit confusing. One food bank, the Mid-Michigan Food Bank, which is owned by the American Red Cross, here in Mid-Michigan, is really a warehousing operation. They have a huge warehouse out by the airport in Lansing. They bring in large quantities of food, truckloads of food. They sort it and they ship it out to pantries and agencies around this community and actually in a seven-county area. The Greater Lansing Food Bank has three organizations. I think we're best known as a fundraising organization. And we raise $1.5 million a year and probably another $1 million-plus dollars a year in in-kind contributions. People donate food to us. And so we take that, those funds and we pay for food. We support a wide-ranging pantry network. Or we go out and we buy food, or we take contributed food and we deliver it. And there's no charge for that when we do that. A second organization that we have that some people know about is called the Garden Project. And the Garden Project was started a number of years ago by some visionary farmers in this community. And what they do is they support the development of community gardens. And there are currently 85 community gardens in and around the Lansing area, and they're mostly neighborhood gardens. And so these gardens really accomplish, I think, a number of things. First, they help people to get this sense of how do you grow food. But then they're growing food for themselves and their families and their neighbors. And there's a wonderful sense of ownership that takes place. And I think a great sense of pride. You see people coming together in a neighborhood that this is their garden. And it just had tremendous success. So we don't grow, but we provide tons of support. And then the third organization was started probably about 10 years ago, and it began with an editorial in the Lansing State Journal. And the editorial editor at that time, Mark Nixon, wrote a column, and he said, you know, it's such a shame that we have great restaurants and Kellogg Center and the dormitories, and you look at all the food that we throw out every night. It's too bad we can't recycle that. And from that comment came the Greater Lansing Food Bank Food Movers Program, where we literally go out and we rescue food. So we rescue food from Kellogg, from the hospital cafeterias, from the dormitories, from restaurants around the community. We take that food in refrigerated trucks. We move it right over to Salvation Army, Volunteers of America, a whole range of areas that people are fed. And we've expanded that to the point now that when grocery stores in the area, when they have food that is approaching an outdate, instead of throwing it away, you know, we will take this food that's perfectly good and we will immediately move it out so that families can get this through what we call neighborhood distributions, our neighborhood partnerships. And we get this food into people's hands. So those are our three programs. And what we just announced just a few weeks ago is that the Mid-Michigan Food Bank and the Greater Lansing Food Bank will soon become one. The two boards have been talking for a number of years, and I think sometimes the stars just have to align correctly, and I think they've done that now. And so I give the boards of both organizations a tremendous amount of credit for having the vision and the courage to say it's time that we put this all together, that we combine the operations to create efficiencies and to create an organization that can most easily feed people. And so July 1st has been set as the date that we will officially consolidate. And so we've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of questions that are not answered yet. The simplest question, what will we be called? I don't know. Questions, will we be in one location or the current two? We'll probably stay in the two immediately because neither location is big enough to house the other. But a lot of people are talking about the vision of pulling everything together. What programs will we continue? What programs won't we continue? What new programs will we bring on board? To be decided. But to me, as the interim executive of the Greater Lansing Food Bank, and the individual who's been asked to help pull these together, I just see tremendous opportunities for the community. I think it's what the community wants. I think the easy side is it will eliminate confusion about, well, which food bank am I working with? The more difficult but the even more important side is if we do this right, which we have to, it will create an incredibly efficient system to feed people in our community who need help. And so that's what I'm working on right now. At the same time, for both organizations, you know, while we're trying to figure out, so what steps do we need to take, developing a plan, developing a vision, we still need to make sure we stay focused on doing what we're doing today because it's too important, taking care of people in need, not to do it well. So that's where our focus is right now. Great opportunities, a lot of work, and the way this will become successful is with the continued support of the community. And the community has just been wonderful in providing support to both food banks because I think people and businesses in this community have seen this as an absolute priority. You know, times are tough, and I know a lot of not-for-profits are having a pretty rough time in raising money. And I can say that for the Greater Lansing Food Bank, that our fundraising has been consistent, even in these difficult times. Again, because I think people really see this as a priority.
Joe Wald says the Greater Lansing Food Bank's biggest fundraiser is the Envelope Campaign.
And we partner with the Lansing State Journal. They've been a great partner for, I believe, 20-plus years. And so around the holidays, we kick this off in early November. The Lansing State Journal puts envelopes in a Sunday paper, and these envelopes go to everybody who gets the State Journal. And then in December, there's a second insertion of the envelopes. We have been able to raise right around $1 million each of the last 2 years, which if you think of the town that we're in, Lansing is a blue-collar, middle-class town. We don't have, you know, the major donors. We don't get $10,000 and $20,000 and $50,000 gifts like some major communities. The majority of our gifts are $5, $10, $25, $100. And with gifts like that, we raise $1 million, which I think says so much about the quality of the community that we live in. And so our target this year is, once again, to raise close to $1 million because there's need. And unfortunately, you know, with the economic situation, which, you know, we keep hearing maybe it's getting a little better, maybe it's not, I can tell you that for each of the last 4 or 5 months in Ingham County, that there have been 100 new families a month who have requested emergency help from the previous month. So it's not getting better. Unfortunately, you know, the need continues to exist. And so it's only because of the support of the community that we are able to help these people. And I'm so proud to say that the community is making it possible to help these people. You know, our philosophy is that nobody in our community should go hungry. That's unforgivable. And so thank goodness the resources are there, the networks are there. A lot of really good people work on this to make sure that people don't go hungry. So the envelope campaign is now in play. People can take the envelopes. They will be around at major businesses in the community who have agreed that they will carry it. But people can also go online. And our website is www.greaterlansingfoodbank.org. All one word, Greater Lansing Food Bank. They can also contribute online. And what we have seen over the last couple of years is each year we are getting more and more donations online. Last year, in fact, of the $1 million we raised, more than 20% was brought in through online contributions. So it's a caring community. I think it's a most worthwhile cause. You know, we just, in Greater Lansing, in mid-Michigan, people take care of each other, and we are there to help.
As the world's population continues to grow, there will be a greater need for food in the future, Joe Wald says.
The need continues and the need increases. In fact, this last summer, the Ingham County Health Department issued a report that said need in just Ingham County increased by 15% need for food over the last year. That's sad, but it's reality. And so I believe that that there's some really smart people working on. So how do we finally solve this problem? I can tell you that 30 years ago, and the Greater Lansing Food Bank is celebrating its 30th anniversary. In some ways, it's a sad anniversary. You know, we never planned to be here 30 years. On the other side, I think it's a great tribute to the community which has supported this organization for 30 years because the need has not gone away. But I think one of the ways that we help, I'm not sure we're going to solve it, but that we help, is some of the programs that we've looked at. And the programs that we focus on, it's the food rescue program, which more and more food banks are getting into. Instead of just going out and buying more food, they're saying there's so much food that's not used. Let's use this good food for people who need it, at least until they can get back up on their feet. So that's one program. The second program is our garden project program. And even the federal government now is looking at ways to take small garden projects like ours and work to expand it so that neighbors will start working larger plots with the thought that they'll feed themselves, they'll feed them their families, they'll feed their neighbors, and then they'll start taking the excess because of the larger size of what they're doing and redistribute it back into the community, even potentially as commercial ventures. So I think that some really intelligent people have looked at this. They understand that you can't go on like this forever, that, you know, if we can't, we've got to figure out how to fix it. Band-Aids are nice, and Band-Aids serve a purpose, but we want to fix it. And I think one of the ways to fix it is to empower people to take care of themselves. And so I'm a firm believer of that. Our organization is firmly behind that. I think our board and the board of the Mid-Michigan Food Bank, the American Red Cross Mid-Michigan chapter, are a lot of visionaries. And I think that as they look at how do we make this a better place to live, work, and raise our families, they all understand that we've got to, first of all, treat people with dignity. We've got to help them when they're in need. We've got to help pick them up. But we've also got to give them skills so that they can start to become self-sufficient. There's a lot of work to do, but I do see that people have smiles on their faces because they believe that we're moving in the right direction. And I would say that if anybody can do it, Mid-Michigan can do it. We have great corporate partners. We have great community support. Michigan State is a fabulous partner. The student food bank is aligned with the Greater Lansing Food Bank. We've worked together for years. When there's food drives on campus, food drives at the upcoming football game, we will make sure that that food is redistributed throughout the community, into the student community, and throughout the community. So, we're doing a lot of good things.
Joe Wald says the Greater Lansing Food Bank is a great value and can really stretch a dollar, and they can always use more volunteers.
You know, to me, as one of the new guys in town here, I've been here for going on almost 30 years, but relatively new to the food banking needs of our community. I've seen organizations for years who've stepped forward to really help people. And so a lot of people come to me and say, so what can I do? How can I make a difference? And I think there's a lot of ways that people in this community can make a difference. And a lot of the people, in fact, most of the people I talk to, they don't want recognition. They just want to do a little bit to help. And so to me, our campaign for this major fundraiser that we're doing right now, the Envelope Campaign, the theme is coming together to fight hunger. And I think what we all can do is just a little bit. Doesn't take a lot. People have asked me, I said, I don't have a lot to give. Sometimes a dollar can make a difference. It's amazing when you talk about the food banking industry. We can purchase food when we need to at pennies on the dollar. Much less expensive than if you go into a store and have to buy it. And so, we can stretch a dollar a lot further than a family can. And we can turn that dollar into many meals for families. It's unbelievable how little it takes to feed a family of four for a month. And so when families give us a dollar, $10, $50, we will put full nutritious meals on tables. So I think one way is for everybody to do just a little bit, and maybe just a little bit more than you'd think of, because you will make a difference. The second thing is, there's always needs for volunteers. We are successful because we're able to hold our costs down. And there's tremendous needs for volunteers from everything to going out on the farms in the summer and the fall to harvest, to loading and unloading, packing boxes for people, to doing office work so we don't have to hire people. Love to employ people. It's what we read about in the papers. But for every dollar we don't have to spend, it's another dollar we can put into food. So there's a lot of opportunities for people here, and any type of support, large or small, will make a difference. And I think that's the message that we would like to get to the people in this community.
Joe Wald, Interim Executive Director of the Greater Lansing Food Bank, online at, all one word, greaterlansingfoodbank.org. For MSU Today, I'm Russ White. To hear my conversation with Joe Wald again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, the inspiring story of MSU alumna Brittany Fox and Ty Song Fair Trade.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Once upon a time, a young girl from the small town of Garden in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan had a dream about exploring the far corners of the world. When she came to Michigan State University, her overseas studies experience gave her the opportunity to do just that, and her life was changed forever. Brittany Fox graduated from MSU's James Madison College with a degree in international relations and jumped on a plane to Thailand with $300 in her pocket and a desire to help the destitute women of Bangkok. Her company, Thai Song Fair Trade, creates boutique jewelry and handbags out of recycled pop cans and plastic bags, providing employment, self-esteem, and a future beyond poverty for the women of Thailand's capital city. Brittany joins us on MSU Today. How did a nice girl like you end up in a place like Bangkok?
Well, Scott, the first time I went to Bangkok was in 2007. And I was volunteering and helping out there and actually helping an organization that was reaching out to women in prostitution. And it was during that experience in Thailand that my heart broke for the women of that nation, and I just knew that I had to do something about their situation.
What took you there in the first place?
Well, I had a heart to serve and a heart to learn about gender injustices happening around the world. I had experienced gender injustice in my own life in the past and really struggled with my identity as a woman. And so I wanted to learn about the plight of women internationally, and I wanted to see what struggles they were going through in their lives, and I wanted to hear their story. I didn't want to just read about them. I didn't want to just read statistics. I wanted to sit down, and I wanted to hear their heart and see what struggles they had gone through. So that trip, Thailand was my first country that I stopped at, and then I went on to travel in India and Afghanistan and Burma as well during that trip.
That's quite a change from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to a big town like East Lansing and then to all of these places. How did you adjust coming from the Upper Peninsula to a place like East Lansing for school?
Well, as a Uper, I really struggled with being around people all of the time. I grew up in the woods, and I was used to being able to easily just walk next door into the open forest and be alone. I could scream, I could shout, I could do whatever I wanted to. But when I moved into the McDonald Hall and I was surrounded by people, it was such an adjustment for me to have to all of a sudden always be with people, always be talking to people, and not to just be able to yell or scream whenever I wanted to.
And Thai Song Fair Trade, what's the name mean?
Thai Song means to emit freedom in the Thai language. We got the name from the name of the community that we're working in. The community's name is Maha Thai Song. And so we wanted to take something that was very Thai because we want to give dignity to these women. We want to give them ownership. And so we wanted to give the business a very Thai name that had dignity, ownership, but also had a meaning to our American customers and also our customers in the UK as well.
How did you start it?
Well, lots of work, lots and lots of work, and a lot of faith. It was a scary endeavor to take on as a 22-year-old woman without any experience in business. And to start it, actually, it came out of conversation one day. I talked with my close Thai friend, and we were just talking about the plight of women in the slum communities that we knew locally. And so as we started to talk and dream together, I said, well, we have to do this. And my friend Tukta was like, yeah, we should do it. But then when I came back to her 2 days later and said, let's go hire someone in the slum. Let's see if someone wants a job. And she looked at me and she said, Brittany, you meant now? I thought you meant when we were like 40 or qualified or we had some kind of experience first. But we just took a leap of faith and we stepped out and took the risk. And it was a difficult journey. We didn't have many resources. We didn't have much money, but we learned how to tap into friends and networks and how to get by on very little as well. But through that, we discovered we had a community around us. And that community was my local community in the UP, but also my community of Spartans here in Lansing. And being able to tap into friendships and relationships and get advice and finances all through those networks that I'd created.
How did you recruit your first employee?
Well, Pilek has been a friend of mine for about 5 years. I met her during my first trip to Thailand. And she's in a very desperate situation in that she's raising a 29-year-old handicapped son. She's the sole breadwinner for her family. And when I first met Pilek, she sorted through trash and would be paid $3 a day to go through paper trash and sort out the ones with lines, the ones with writing on it. And I knew that her current salary wasn't enough for her to survive. And she really didn't know what to do to provide for her family. She told me one day at that point that she normally only ate a handful of rice a day. And she all of the rest of her food went to her mentally handicapped son. So we knew of her situation, and I had already had a relationship with her. So Tukta and I just went to her home, sat down with her and her son, and Tukta started to teach her how to crochet that day. She said right away, she said, I'll try it. I've been laid off for 20 days, and we need money, so I'll try it. But then as she started practicing with Tukta, started learning how to crochet, she said, you know what? I can't do this. I can't do anything good. I can't create anything of beauty. And but Tukta and I sat there with her, and we said, no, we believe in you. You can do this. You can make something beautiful. And so what we did is we said, we'll give you a week. We're going to leave you the supplies. We know that you already know how to do this. And we're going to come back in a week. And in a week's time, then you can make your decision. But we want you to know that we believe in you. And we know that you can do this.
Is that lack of self-esteem a commonality for women in Thailand?
Yes. A lot of women that I've met have just never had someone to come alongside them and say, you know what? I believe in you. I believe that you can do something for your family. I believe that you can get an education. I believe that you can achieve things. A lot of women I've met have never been taught to dream. And that's one of the great benefits we have living here in the U.S. that we take for granted. We have so many people that will come alongside of us and say, I believe in you. But these women don't have that. And that's one of our goals with Thai Song, is to empower these women by believing in them.
So you've written that you actually went into places where prostitution was taking place to interview these women. What were those conversations like?
Well, we would sit down with them and just chat with them like we would chat with anyone else. It was a bar scene, and so we would sit down, order a drink, and just ask them questions about their life. So I would just start the conversation like I would with anyone else. And these women were so impressed and so honored to have someone talk to them and to actually really want to know them rather than to use them. So they were always very quick to open up. And some of the ladies that I would meet would start crying as they would start to tell me their story. And they would say, you know, Fasai, which is my Thai name, they would say, Fasai, I've been through so much, and I hate what I have to do to make money for my family. But I don't think I have any other options. I have 3 kids back at home that my parents are taking care of, and I have to support my family, and I have to support my parents, and everyone's depending on me, and this is my only option. I hate my life. And so when I first went there, I was working with an organization, giving them job training to get them out of prostitution. And that's what spurred my heart to start Thai Song, in order to create a business that's preventatory, that can come in and support women before they get to that place.
And you make your products out of trash.
Yes, we use recycled pop cans. You can tell I'm from the Midwest. I say pop.
That's the only way to say it. Yeah.
And we also use recycled plastic bags. And then we even have some earrings that are made from straws. We sanitize all of the garbage, so you don't have to worry about that, and create things that are high quality and trendy. One of the things that people love about our earrings and our bags is that when you wear them, someone will look at them, and they'll kind of turn their head a little bit, and they'll say, wait, what is that? Then they'll get close, and they still won't know what it is. And then when you finally tell them what your earrings are made out of or your bag are made out of, it's a great conversation piece to talk about poverty, talk about environmental issues, and also just to make a great fashion statement about your uniqueness.
You plow every penny that you earn back into the company. How are you paid?
Well, I actually am not paid by the company. I'm a volunteer, and the way that I can do what I do through Taesong is through donations. There's a lot of little old ladies up in the UP that send $20 or $30 a month just to help me get by. I just live a very meager lifestyle, and I'm able to keep doing what I'm doing there, and that's my passion. So for me, it's worth it.
You know, people that are listening are probably asking themselves, why? Why do you do this?
Well, I love people. I love Thai women, and I believe in them. And I have so many opportunities that I've been given living in America. And I've been blessed by so many ways, by so many people. And I've been given so much that I just want to give back. And my faith is a big part of my life as well. And I just want to be able to love people well, because I've received so much love and I've received so much grace in my own life.
How do your parents feel about this young woman living alone in the capital city of Thailand and working in the slums?
Well, I like to think they're proud of me. But at times I think they do worry about me, especially times like now when there's flooding in Thailand and when there's political riots, as there were last May. But really, they believe in what I do in Taesong, and they're my biggest fans. They're my biggest supporters. And really, without their backing and their support, I don't know how I would do this. They're also our main distributors for Taesong and do a lot of work on our behalf.
What's it like to be a minority?
Well, before moving to Thailand, I never knew what it was like to be a minority. And being a minority is challenging every day. And it's changed my perspective of how I see others and how I see minorities in America. In Thailand, a lot of people see the attention that white people get there as a positive thing. But as a woman, it's very challenging to get that type of attention, especially because the dignity of women is not always retained in that situation. And so being a minority is challenging. I never blend in. I never fit in. And people stare at me all of the time. But it's also an open door, though, to meet people and to talk to people and to get to know them. So I think there's positive and negative sides to my minority status in Thailand.
So how do you model that behavior of dignity and personal power in an environment like that?
Well, I do what I can to make wise choices and to always remember that people are watching. As an American woman, I have an opportunity to change people's perspectives of Americans around the world. And so a lot of my heart is to model what it means to be an empowered woman. I want to be a model to our ladies of why education is important, which is a big reason of why I came back to school after dropping out at the age of 19. And so a lot of my passion is to model and to mentor and to come alongside of these women and to be a volunteer, to show them that I'm willing to lay down my own agendas and my own ideas of what importance or success is for their sake. And my heart is to always model a lifestyle that loves other people and really considers their neighbor before themselves.
How did MSU prepare you for all of this?
Well, MSU was a great place for me to learn about international relations, not just in an academic sort, but I lived in an international community. I loved being a resident of McDonald Hall, which is full of international students. I worked at the Office for International Students and Scholars and had an opportunity to surround myself with people from all over the world. In the past, if I wanted to interact with people from other countries, I had to travel there. But MSU creates a global community here that we can learn from other nations and interact with other nations right here on campus.
As people listen to this show, they have to be blown away by your courage, your tenacity, and there are probably other people out there that want to help you as a result of all this. How can people help you with your mission at Taesong Fairtrade?
Well, we're in the process of expanding right now, and one of the best ways that people can help out is by becoming our customers. We sell our products on an online store, which is taesongfairtrade.com, and we have all of our products available there, and that's one of the main ways that people can help out, because that's what supports our business and supports our social project that we do in Thailand.
Brittany Fox is our guest, an amazing woman and a grand award winner from the MSU Alumni Association's Grand Awards program this year. Any advice for senior girls who are about to go out into the real world about finding their passion?
I think what I would encourage you is to not be afraid to take risks. Don't be afraid to step out and try something new, even if no one's ever done it before. So often, we spend so much of our time tiptoeing through life that we never get a chance to really try things or really chase our passions. So I think I would just really challenge you to, even if it's a small risk, just to step out towards your passion, even if it's not normal.
Living among all this destitution and poverty, how do you keep your positive attitude?
Well, a lot of what I do is hold on to the little victories that we see every day, whether it's something as small as one of our ladies saying thank you for what we're doing for them through Taesong, or if I can see one of our ladies start to work their way out of debt, or just a time where one of our ladies will share that for the first time they're starting to really believe in themselves. I hold on to the little things that I see that are really positive impacts in the lives of the ladies that I work with. And above all, I always turn to God and just look to God to give me the strength to go through what I'm doing, and really believing that He's the source of hope for the world.
So how can people contact you?
Well, email is the best way to get a hold of me. And my email address is Brittany, Brittany, at taesongfairtrade.com. And we're looking for retailers that we can sell our products at. We're looking for new networking opportunities, PR opportunities. And really one of our biggest needs is just for the word to get spread about what we're doing so that we can enlarge our capacity to take on more women to work for our project.
TaesongFairtrade.com is the website. And Brittany Fox has been our guest in this segment of MSU Today.
That was MSU Alumni Association Executive Director Scott Westerman talking with MSU alumna Brittany Fox. Please learn more about Taesong Fairtrade online at TaesongFairtrade.com. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit MSU Today online at SpartanPodcast.com and tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Happy New Year.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.